Okay, let's go to, let's see, are we on 306?
Yes.
Yes. 306. So that's legit?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Repeat it to me. 306. Sahasrajit.
Sahasrajit.
Sahasrani.
Sahasrani.
Asuranam.
Asuranam.
Yudhe.
Yudhe.
Jayati Yuti.
Jayati Yuti.
Sahasrajit.
Sahasrajit.
So here, Sahasra means a thousand. Sahasrani means thousands. And in the numbers work a little differently. In Sanskrit, some of the numerals will take a genitive, so others it will just agree. Here, the sahasra, thousands, sahasrani, neuter, thousands, asuranam, thousands of asuras.
Mm-hmm.
The asuras are the tamasic demons. So, thousands, sahasrani, asuranam, thousands of demons, yudhe, in war, yudhe's war, look at it. 7-1. Mm-hmm. So sahasrani asuranam yudhe jayati iti. He conquers.
Mm-hmm.
He conquers thousands, and Swamiji will always say thousand. They say thousands in the commentary, thousands in the mantras and things that we learn. It usually means limitless, endless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he conquers endless asuras yudhe in battle. Iti sahasrajit. So sahasra means thousand, or in a compound, it could be 1,000, it could be 2,000, it could be many thousands in the compound. It depends on how you break it. Jit comes from ji, to conquer, and when it's at the end of a compound, it would be jit. So the one who conquers thousands. And then in Shankara's commentary, Sahasrani Asuranam, the one who conquers thousands of asuras in battle. Okay, so that's that one. There's something I wanted to read here that Swamiji said. Just about Dharma and Adharma. So just to read this short little paragraph. He says, Bhagawan helps the devas to defeat thousands of asuras in battle. This is the Leela of Bhagawan. It is because of Bhagawan's help that the devas are able to defeat the asuras. The asuras are the demons, the adharmis. The devas are the gods, the adharmis. Those are shining and tejas. Right? The idea is that, and this is what I like so much, the idea is that dharma wins over adharma. And finally, it is only dharma that prevails, because Bhagawan is in the form of dharma. Even if there are thousands of obstacles, it is dharma alone that will win. In the whole Mahabharata, it is shown that dharma alone wins and all adharma is finally destroyed, and that is why it is called Jaya victory. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like that. He's talked about that in many different ways over the years, that dharma moves slowly, but it will always roll over and crush adharma, because dharma is Bhagawan. That's Bhagawan's nature. And so the adharma just gets rolled over in time. But of course, it moves more slowly than we do. So we might not always realize that. Okay? We might not always see that. But.
Well, do they say adharma is Bhagawan's nature?
No, Bhagawan's nature is dharma, but the jiva has free will. So jiva srishti. The jiva srishti brings about a dharma, which is pushing against the walls of dharma. A dharma is pushing against the walls of dharma, and it always kind of gets pushed back, you know, because it's pushing against Bhagawan's Ishwar srishti, Ishwar's creation. Jiva srishti is the individual's powers of free will and creative capacity and making choices that are against dharma.
Mm-hmm. But that's only when we look at Ishwara Srishti and Jiva Srishti separately, and not as Jiva Srishti being part of.
Yeah. That's why a dharma can take place in. There's room for a dharma in Ishwara Srishti, but it's not going to be rooted in Ishwara. It's going to be rooted in the jiva's capacity, because otherwise you have to say that Ishwara itself is a dharma, but a dharma is not Ishwara Swarupa. Dharma is. Dharma is like the bones or the structure of Ishwara. The relationship between Ishwar and Dharma is also really important to understand.
So it seems to me like throughout the commentary, there's something going on that's kind of personified in this, or shown strongly in this verse. Is that on the one hand, the divine or the ultimate is like non-personified, or just Dharma, and then also it's talking about as like Bhagawan doing some help. It says, you know, Bhagawan helps, so also personify. So it seems like there's both being talked about.
You can talk about what, because the whole universe is a conscious being, in the sense that it's Ishwara. It has consciousness as its self. So just like for you, also you're a conscious being, because consciousness is the self that illumines the mithya upadi. Mm-hmm. You know, and so say if. As the Shastra says, the whole infinite creation, because Sattva runs through the entire creation, as does Rajas and Tamas run through the entire creation, because there's no what we call abhimana. Abhimana means like a sense of I in one particular nama-rupa, which is limiting. Like for every jiva, there's a sense of me, an abhimana, in the upadis, whatever the upadi, body, mind, sense organs, is that sense of me. And that sense of me is limited to the upadi, whereas the me-ness, which actually is the very nature of consciousness, it's not the sense of me does not belong to the upadi. It doesn't belong to the Ishwara upadi or to the jiva upadi. You get rid of the whole entire creation, say, like in the Laya, when the creation is an unmanifest condition. There's just me. that word, we use the word, when we use the word me, it lands always on the upadhi. But if there is no upadhi, what is left is me. So me is a loaded word because it's full of ahankara, right? But the me experience, that's where kind of the lights go on in terms of liberation. You realize that you, the one you identify with as me, is still there in its limitless nature without any upadhi. So the one, the me that is me is the one non-dual me that is Ishwara. Not attached to any or dependent upon any upadhi at all. So this, which is so special, so beloved, my own being, which we label as me, we label me, this being as me, this being that is the self of Ishwara, that is the self of all beings, that is the self that is Brahman. But always, we're of course always viewing it from the standpoint of the upadhi, and from the Ishwara upadhi, the Ishwara, the total Ishwara upadhi also has this me, because me, consciousness, is its adhishtana. You know, adhishtana means what is the very self, the very truth of the mithya. All mithya upadhi depends on it for its being. So then we can, as though personify Bhagawan, but that means we can anthropomorphize Bhagawan. You say personify. You know, you anthropomorph, as though Bhagawan is a Bhagawan walking around. You know, and then we look at all of the devas and the asuras, which can be there or not be there. They can just be personifications of Dharma. Or when we look at terms of the creation, according to the Shastra, to have different lokas, different levels of reality, those, the beings in those levels and those lokas, levels of realities, are called devas and asuras, and they're gandharvas and all of this. Which very well, that it can definitely be, or maybe it is, maybe it's mythological, or maybe it actually is. But whatever it is, it's mithya, you know. But it's like saying, us saying, no, the only reality here is this one earth and an infinite planet. Because we can't see any other people or beings on other planets, that we don't know that there's any other planets that have societies and people and whatnot. And so we say, well, I think in this whole infinite universe, well, there's only this. But to me, it's kind of similar to saying, in this whole infinite universe, even though in science itself it's recognized many different dimensions, and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of different dimensions, but depending on your own orientation, we can say, well, that's all imaginal. But some people can say, no, I think that there are different dimensions, you know, and different levels of subtlety. Like pisachas. Pisachas are the ghosts. The ones that are hovering around, those are called ghosts. And then there's gandharvas and names for all of the different beings from the different dimensions. And you can believe that or not believe that. It's not really going to affect your knowledge, but then it's your self-knowledge. But then it is there in the Shastra, and it is a vision, you know, to understand.
What? Oh, there's no special upadhi or no favorable upadhi for Ishwara. I mean,
well, it depends on if you think at the higher levels they have divine upadhis. If you want to say that upadhi is better than this upadhi, what you mean is that it has more power, it enjoys much more ananda and much more fullness. But it's still nitya. Whether it's a deva form, an asura form, a human form, an animal form, it's still nitya. You know, so the truth of all of them is one conscious being. So we can look at Ishwara, which is an infinite manifestation of a manifestation of infinite knowledge. That's what I like, as Swamiji says. The manifestation of infinite knowledge that has me as its being. So I am as well Ishwara from the standpoint of self as I am the self of every jiva. You know, so that Ishwara also is me. It is the whole universe is a conscious being. And so we can name that conscious being, Ishwara, as Bhagawan. Bhagawan is like a name for Ishwara, a name for the Lord. But then we can find ourselves personifying Bhagawan as a man in heaven who's making these decisions. Where it's not that. It's the decisions are part of an infinite dharma. you know, an infinite order, you know, of which all beings are part of. And included in that infinite order are things like mantras and prayers that are viewed as manasakarmas. So they're also, they also have karmapala. Something's a karma will have a karmapala, a result. That's why they don't take prayer or curses lightly. A prayer, if you think of it like this, a prayer, which is wishing somebody well, or praying for the success or the happiness or the health of someone. You know, that's a karma, because it's not just thought flow. It could just be thought flow, that's not considered a karma. It's like scenery. Thought flow is just scenery. There's nobody enacting it, it's just taking place. And the scenery, the things that are taking place in your mind can be positive or negative. Like Swami says, the mind can have all kinds of funny thoughts.
Yeah.
But that's different than your will, a directed thought. That is called the karma. So if I pray for you, or I wish you well, or pray for the earth or whatever, pray for Antakarna Shuddhi. That's a karma that has its own karma pala. That doesn't mean the answer is always yes, but it's still a karma that you've put out there. And so a curse is also a karma. And you're putting out something, like an evil eye, they call it sometimes, you know, where you're wishing somebody harm. That's a karma. But doing such a karma is a dharma. It goes against the nature of the creation. And so you pay for that also in a negative way. So they say, but it makes sense to me. It depends on if you just are looking at the creation. This creation is really all there is. Everything else is mythological and not real. Or if you give some reality to different levels of your experience. Anyway. So, good answer.
I'm fully answered.
Good.
But that's kind of difficult, because we're so hooked on numinous experiences, you know.
What is that? What's wrong with that?
I don't know, because it's still part
of Maya.
Yes.
But the self is illumining a numinous experience. And I call those kind of beacon lights along the way.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Because you understand that there are very beautiful and profound levels to this creation that are much more than just what you're perceiving, you know, in the physical world. There are so many other things going on that you can become sensitive to.
So like you're kind of pulled along by the...
Oh, like you know, there is a God. There is Bhagavan is there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's do 307. Anantajit.
Anantajit.
Sarvabhutani.
Sarvabhutani.
Yuddha Kridadishu.
Yuddha Kridadishu.
Sarvatra.
Sarvatra.
Achintya Shaktitaya.
Achintya Shaktitaya.
Jayati Iti.
Jayati Iti.
Anantajit.
Anantajit.
And here it says, Sarva Bhutani, all beings, it's in 2-3, accusative plural, Sarva Bhutani. Yuddha Krida Adishu. Yuddha means war, battle. Krida means play, sport. Adi, etc. Such things as battle, war, and sports or play. So, yuddha krida adishu, sarvatra, everywhere. Mm. That's an indeclinable where you have sarva means all or every, but the tra affix gives a 7-1 sense. Mm-hmm. The locative singular, that tra, is an indeclinable affix. So you say sarvatra, everywhere. In all occasions. So sarvatra, achintya shakti taya. Taya is from the ta affix, and it's 3-1, instrumental singular, because ta affix is feminine, and it's another abstract affix, like twam, ta, and ya also is one. Okay, so here as 3-1, it's instrumental singular. By the limitless power, which the achintya means something you can cogitate on or think about. Achintya means it's inconceivable. Mm. By the inconceivable power. So in English, they don't use words like his or her very rarely. So you have to supply those to make an English sentence. So you would say, jayati iti. He says, he conquers or is victorious. Let's say in sport, somebody's victorious. Somebody wins, somebody loses. In battle, you know, there's somebody who wins the war, somebody who loses the war. But here, jayati, he is victorious because of the inconceivable shakti, achintya, inconceivable, it cannot be even imagined, it's because it's infinite. Because of the inconceivable, infinite shakti, sarvatra, everywhere, and so this would be in using the locative, in all occasions, in all situation, in every situation, such as war, sports, play, etc. So in every conceivable situation, he is he conquers jayati sarvabhutani. He conquers all beings. It's not just human beings. He is always victorious in every situation, whether it be war, sport, etc. Because of his limitless capacity, shakti, achintya shakti. Okay.
Why sarvabhutani
is
just a plural? Shouldn't it be in genitive? Like
no,
the
because sarvabhutani jayati, he conquers all beings.
Okay.
And then why? How does he? Because of inconceivable shakti, and in every occasion, such as yuddha, krida, etc.
Okay.
What does it mean he's always victorious?
It means that Bhagavan always wins.
When?
You're not going to win. You will win. You will win.
If you're aligned.
If you're aligned with Bhagavan, you'll win. Otherwise, in the end, Bhagavan always wins.
It's kind of the same theme as the previous verse.
It is. He is this because of Dharma and anantatmaka Brahma Jayati. He says, Brahman, who is limitless, Ananta, who's nature, Atmaka, here's nature.
Mm-hmm.
Ananta means ananta, no end, without end. So, ananta, Atmaka, Brahma. Okay.
Wow.
Brahman, who is, Brahma is Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brahma is, because of being limitless, because of Dharma, Brahma, who is limitless, conquers. Therefore, he is anantajit. He is ever victorious over every being everywhere. Okay? But all this says is his victory, as a victor, as a conqueror, it is endless. There's no exception. So, and then he says sarvabhutani, to make it clear. He is victorious at all times over all beings.
It makes it sound
you can't
like
get
Dharma,
behind, can't get beyond him.
It makes it sound like Dharma supersedes the upadis. Dharma is going to be...
Dharma is the structure in which all upadis, all nama-rupa, exist within the structure with as part of Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
So Ishwara is an infinite Dharma. If you look at the order, Swamiji will call it the order, Ishwara's order.
Okay.
And that order pervades everything. So we have all different kinds of words for that order. Like even if you... Mathematics is one order... Psychology is an order, you know, biology is an order. So everything that we can actually, we discover order continually, but the order that we're discovering is Ishwara's order. And Dharma is a word for it, especially when it gets into your value system.
Yeah. Rather in this commentary, there's a middle sentence says, I am satyam jnanam anantam brahma, which is the brahma pada. What does that mean, brahma pada?
Pada has two meanings. Pada can mean just the word Brahman, but here it means the Brahma Pada is like the abode of Brahman. Brahman's not an abode, right?
Yeah.
But when we say like the abode or the place or the, then we have to say, well, what do you mean by abode? We mean adhishtana,
yeah.
The very nature. We mean the nature, the swarupa of Brahman.
The way
of. And the Brahma Swarupa, so take Pada here as the very nature of Brahman, is Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, which is the same as Satchit Ananda in the Taittiriya Upanishad. So Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam is the Lakshana for Brahman. Means that these words don't apply to anything else. When you say Satyam is a Lakshana, a definition of the word in the form of a lakshana, that it can only mean, it can only indicate that one thing. And there's those two types of lakshana, tatastha lakshana and swarupa lakshana. Tatastha lakshana is the example that we have for tatastha lakshana is if you look down in a Brahmin village, every house is exactly the same. So you look down the road and you say, see, my house is there, but they're all the same, so it's not going to work. You know, if I say, look at my house, it's, you know, down the street, look at my house. Every single house is the same. Then he has to say, no, it's the one that has the bird on the top of the chimney. That's a tatastha lakshana. It's, the bird has nothing to do with the house, but it points to it. Because there's not a bird on any other house. That's tatastha.
So, sorry.
And swarupa lakshana is a description of the very nature of whatever it is that the you're describing. So the swarupa lakshana of Brahman is satyam, you know, jnanam anantam brahma. That's swarupa lakshana. Swarupa means its own nature. The tatastha lakshanam, the most commonly cited tatastha lakshanam for Brahman, is the one from whom the creator, is stithi, that comes, is born, is sustained, and resolves.
Oh.
Which is, you can describe that,
yeah,
endlessly, but you're not describing Brahman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's only, it only belongs to Brahman, you know. As Brahman is its adhishtana. There's nothing else that is the adhishtana or the truth of that.
That's a subtle distinction, isn't it?
Oh, it's, well, it's usually, we don't usually bother to talk about it in terms of the world, but it's actually, it's really powerful.
Sometimes I confuse the words linga and lakshana. So lakshana is a definition, but linga is like a symbol or something indicating.
Yes, different meanings. Uh-huh. But one of the most common meanings of linga is that which is necessary to infer the existence of something else.
Uh-huh.
Like the linga of fire in the, I see smoke on the hill, therefore there is fire.
Uh-huh.
Smoke becomes the linga of fire.
Uh-huh.
So there's an invariable concomitance between smoke and fire. When that invariable concomitance is there, then it becomes a linga for what it's inferring.
Uh-huh.
Then there's other meanings for linga also, but this is the major one.
Oh, when you say Shiva linga, that's not
yeah.
the...
Shivalinga? That's
that
different.
Is not the context.
Yeah. No.
But
so Shivalinga, it's a symbol for Shiva. So we're just using it as a symbol. It's a symbol for Brahman.
I'm sorry, God.
It indicates Brahman.
You said that?
So linga, how I just told you about it, is common in Nyaya. Nyaya means logic. The Nyayaikas, in terms of these darshanas, are the logicians. And every one of the schools, including Vedanta, Mimamsa, all of them, they always refer to Nyaya and often disagree with Nyaya. In other words, Nyaya will establish something as a logical syllogism,
mm-hmm.
and then all these terms like we had in the Vicharasagram, like Ativyapti, we find that Nyaya will be making mistakes of ativyapti or avyapti. In other words, they think something has an invariable concomitance with one other thing, but actually, ativyapti means, no, it could mean this, and it could mean this, it could land on this, so that's not going to be a proper inference, you know.
So that's when the...
so in this linga, this word linga is something that is often used in logic, the Nyaya are the main logicians, but then the different schools, because they're also a philosophy, and so there often be big arguments on whether the syllogisms that they are using to establish what they want to establish actually do establish it. It's a huge subject. Swamiji says, just get what you need and run. Get what you need and run, because it's like going into this huge, huge forest.
You get stuck there forever.
You get stuck there forever.
I agree.
But the
this whole thing with the pratigna, you know, I found this so useful. Because particularly if you read anything the Republicans say, because their pratignas are wrong.
Yeah.
And then they go off from there, you know.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So that's interesting in logic also. The pratigna, in any logical syllogism, which you've learned in school, right, like the fire, the smoke fire is a syllogism, the initial statement has to be true. Mm. You know, if that's the initial statement is the pratigna, that has to be true. If that's false, then anything you build off it is also false. Mm-hmm. You know, so
could be logical, but it's based on the pratigna, it's logical, but based on the truth, it's false.
Yeah, because the pratigna itself is false. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
And say if...
Yeah.
We're going into the forest. What time is it? Okay, good. Let's do another one.
308?
Yeah, 308. Ishtaha. Paramananda,
Paramananda,
Atmakatvena,
Atmakatvena,
Priyaha,
Priyaha,
Ishtaha,
Ishtaha,
Yajnena,
Yajnena,
Pujitaha,
Pujitaha,
Visarga drops there, so Pujitaha,
Iti
Va,
Va,
Ishtaha,
Ishtaha.
So here, Ishta means that which is desired, comes from the root Ish. Now, as we'll see, the root ish has another very common meaning, which really comes from yaj. And the yaj takes what's called samprasara, and it goes back to its simple vowel, which is e, and then becomes ishta, the jak, because of sun, goes over to the sha. Anyway, there's several steps there. But what I'm saying is that this root ish has two meanings. That which is desired, the to desire, and ishta is a past passive participle, and ikta, ishta, ishtaha, that which is desired, right? So, and then ishta also means, comes from yaj, which means to worship. So that which is worshipped. So here, the first one is parama ananda atmaka tvena. That tvena is 3-1. Because of being, because of having for, in English we'd say, because atmaka, because of having for its nature. Atmaka tvena. Because of having for its nature, parama ananda. So in English we might say, because of being limitless, ananda. Mm-hmm. Because of its being, and with understanding the atmaka as its own nature, because of having for its nature, limitless, ananda. In English, because of being limitless, ananda. Okay. So parama, limitless, ananda, mm-hmm. ananda. Atmaka tvena, that abstraction, due to being, because of being. Priyaha, ishtaha. It is priyaha, ishtaha. Ishtaha means it is beloved. It is beloved, which is ishtaha. And that what is beloved, what is most dear, is most desired. Right? So what is most dear to you is really the paramananda. Okay. So he says, priyaha is ishtaha, that which is most beloved, that which is most desired. Priyaha, ishtaha. Because of being parama on, having parama ananda for its nature. So Ishwara, Bhagavan, Vishnu, has the unobstructed, your unobstructed, limitless nature, the Sat-Chit, which is ananda. That ananda is actually just your unlimited being. So we think of, we don't often talk about it this way, but ananda is really just me without any type of obstruction. That's why it's not full of flash, it's not like flashy, or it's not some extreme experience. It's just my limitless being that is totally unobstructed. So for Ishwara, there is only unobstructed being because it's not identified with any particular upadhi. The whole upadhi is just an infinite display without my being crushed by the upadhi because of my being identified with anything in it, which so everything in it is going to be rolled over and subject to birth and death and all of these type of things and destruction. But if there's no limitation, then it's just a big mandala of change, an expression of its of the self. And so there is no obstruction to this me, and that's what we call ananda. So that's kind of an important. When we're contemplating on myself, Because I remember, you know, I'd been with Swamiji for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, not very long. And I had a profound experience. I came back to Swamiji and I said, I told him what had happened and explained the experience. And then I go, like, where's the Ananda, Swamiji? So I say, where's the beef? Where's the Ananda? Because I was expecting extreme bliss, this big, you know, it's like 4th of July or something. And it was just, but it's different than that. Like if I say, like when we're teaching, we say sometimes, the self that is here, completely present, uncovered by anything, right now, you know, is who you are. The Satchit Ananda. And say, where's the Ananda? But the Ananda, but the meaning of the Ananda is just the limitlessness, the freedom of yourself. This is so full and so complete. But our word bliss and Satchit Ananda is often defined as bliss is very, very misleading. Because there is really nothing greater, nothing more desired than the beauty of your own being, but we don't have words for it. You have to recognize yourself to recognize. I remember even saying when I was contemplating, how is it that, you know, just being with myself, how is it that I am the most dear? Am I the most dear? I could say to myself. And finally I said, oh, I am. And then I started to understand.
How did you sense that? What was the sense like?
It was just a sense of recognition that there is nothing more dear. And then once that opens up for you, then you, as you start being with your being, you realize why they say Ananda. Because it's not a vritti. There's all kinds of vrittis of bliss. An infinite gradation of bliss and an infinite gradation of pain. You know, but those are vrittis, and the bliss vrittis have certain level of subtlety, so that they reflect in a way, they don't obstruct your nature, but they're adding something else, they're adding levels of subtlety and change. Whereas your being is not is not something that is changed or added to by the vritti. And so that differentiation has to take place, because we're really only used to, we don't have the viveka to discriminate, or even know to discriminate my own being from the thought modifications. We don't even know about that. That's what ignorance is all about. We have what's called a mutual superimposition, where consciousness is the vritti, and vritti is the thought modification, or me, and the thought modification is the soul. So all we know in terms of our experience are a gradiated, kind of an infinite or endless gradation in terms of positive experiences, and then we think of moksha, liberation, as the most positive experience, and then hell is the most negative experience, all in terms of vrittis which come and go.
Because you want to add up, you want to add vrittis onto yourself.
Or you want to get you want to move over to the positive.
Yeah, you want to add them.
But that's all true within relativity. I'd rather have positive vrittis than negative ones. But it's not true in terms of moksha. In terms of moksha, in terms of liberation, the self is there during, with and without vrittis. It's not subject to any kind of a change. The secondary, what I call the secondary pola, the secondary result, is that as that ajnanam, that self-ignorance, is removed, as I gain self-knowledge, then the mind settles down and enjoys a much more natural shanti. It's still what we call apekshika shanti. It's still relative, because you can have knowledge, and you can have a more agitated thought or a duller thought or whatever kind of thoughts you can have, but for the most part, the mind just enjoys a deeper peace and deeper shanti, and so it itself enjoys a more sustainable ananda from its own standpoint. But from the standpoint of you, the one who has self-knowledge, the ananda of your own being is just constant. It never comes and goes because it's you. For you, there's no, for you, the Atman, there's no sorrow, there's no change. Mm-hmm. You are just everything that, mm-hmm. as from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi, is running after trying to find within, within Mitya, within Maya. So it's just all it's finding is experiences that come and go, some positive, some negative. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did Swami say when you asked him?
all I remember, all I kind of remember is him kind of, he just smiled. He smiled and he said, "That's okay." That's okay. And he said, "That's how," he said something like, that's how it is. That's okay. That's something like that. But I don't really, some real short little thing, but I just remember the look on his face. And then he went like this. He went,
yeah.
I thought, oh, that's, I still didn't understand. Because I saw this, yeah, but where's the bliss? Particularly what? Well, once you understand that, once you get that, then you pretty much have knowledge. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Because you're understanding yourself, which isn't a vritti. And you understand why it's ananda. And once you get that, then there's, you can't, that ananda is always there. Because it's not vritti born. You understand it in terms of your own nature. That's a big, big understanding. Okay. Why don't we stop there?